Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, hey, people. Welcome back once again. It's the No Chaser Show. I happen to be the co-host, JT. This is a deja vu all over again, part two. We do have Sylvia Crowley Milbury here. Sorry about that. And the number to call in is 347-637-3220. Like I said, I'm the co-host, and I'm going to give you the host of the show, Mac Williams, and we'll start this show off. Welcome, Mac.
Hey, what's up? What's up? What's up, Jerry? Good to have you. Good to have you. Spend another hour or two on the radio show. I've been looking forward to it all day because we have a very special guest. Probably is our top guest we've had in almost a year of the show.
Right.
Sylvia Crowley, and we lost her last time, but we got her back. We want to do part two. And I was just telling her maybe this is God's work because I've never had as many live listeners archived and everything else. The numbers are just ridiculous.
Yes.
And I want to sincerely thank Sylvia not only for coming back on, but I also want to thank her for producing those big numbers. And hopefully we can convert some of those people into steady listeners on our show. But in the meantime, in between time, Sylvia, we really appreciate you coming back on, and from the bottom of my heart and from the No Chaser Show staff, we really want to thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you for having me again. I can't believe you guys asked me to come back after the last show a couple weeks ago.
I'm telling you, you were extremely engaging, and it was definitely a pleasure to have you on. For the hour and a little bit, about an hour and a half, or close to an hour and a half time. Unfortunately, we got cut off, and we definitely had to have you back because you were that good. I mean, but I just got to say it like that.
Yeah,
I mean, you were that good, and we didn't get finished talking to you what we want to talk to you about. So
we're just that's the easiest interview I've ever had. I was like, shoot, we put her on automatic pilot and just like, why don't we just hang up, Jerry? Just let her go. We'll just podcast that joint. Here was a conversation we had with Sylvia. Take the Friday off. But we really, really appreciate it. And the one thing I wanted to get some of the things, I don't know, I want to know if Jerry had any questions that he didn't get to answer last time. But I'll let Jerry start off first.
Yes, this is what I wanted. You was talking about the first time or one of the times that you had had Sylvia over your former wife's house at a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you finished the story, so I wanted you to finish the story, then we can go from there.
Well, the story was she had just came over and we had got through playing basketball. I think I had invited her over a few days after that. She came. And we just had a great time, and she was just the nicest person. I think the thing that shocked me the most is that Sylvia was, for all of her notoriety, fame, whatever you want to call it, she was never big-headed. She was never a snob. She always came across as the girl next door. She'd have me laughing. You know, she had me laughing, and she was very competitive, but the nicest person. I was always impressed with her balance. Is the balance of I'm Sylvia Crowley, but I'm still Sylvia next door. I can get smart with you and be funny and laugh and all that, but at the same time get competitive with you. And she knew how to handle herself around different people. And so, you know, there was just a good story. It was a good thing, and I was thoroughly impressed because she was one of the first people I knew that were like I could quote unquote say she was famous. And I was just impressed because I always had an idea before her that, you know, famous people were like jerks or, you know, they thought they were better than anybody else. But I'm saying she completely changed my thinking on it. Like, okay, everybody doesn't have to be this way. Somebody actually gets it. So for her, it was always, she was always well-balanced. It's funny because she remarked on my, you know, sometimes she sees my daughter now. And it was funny the other day. I was reminded, I was like, I forgot all about it. I was like, when Sylvia, just to show how long ago it was, when Sylvia came, I think my daughter was like a little girl. I think she was, I don't even know, I think she was either, I can't remember. She could probably remember better than I can, but I don't know. I can't, she wasn't a baby, but she was young. She was pretty young. But I said, man, that's how old I am. I said, my child was a child. When I first knew Sylvia, I said, man, I'm old. So,
Sylvia, you remember that? You remember that or no?
Yeah, I do. I do remember. Anytime you offer food, I'm there. So I don't know about all this down
like
earth stuff Mac's talking about. You offer me food, I'm there.
Focus
no,
like
but I
athlete.
Mac, your daughter was very young at the time. She wasn't a baby, but she was a little girl.
I knew she was a little
girl. She kept staring at me like, Daddy, she's big. I do remember that. But you talked about balance, and it's interesting because I'm a Libra, so I'm a very balanced person. And
mm-hmm.
when things aren't balanced or when things are out of whack, I feel very, very uncomfortable in that space. As you know, just from interacting with
mm-hmm.
me, just trying to organize this show, I'm like, Mac, what time is it going to be? All
right,
where are we call? I need all the details first so I can get my schedule together, get my thoughts collected. But I think some of the balance that I have comes from where I'm from. I'm
mm-hmm.
from Steubenville, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, my parents raised me to be very grounded. I had chores growing up and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had responsibilities. There was a lot of discipline. But also just growing up in a city of Steubenville where everyone there is my cousin or my cousin's cousin.
Man.
So
really?
I've never met a stranger. And then everywhere that I've traveled to, and I've played basketball in 16 different countries,
mm-hmm.
and I've competed in almost every state in the U.S. except for, we talked about it, Hawaii, and there's one other state, Oklahoma, are the only two states that I didn't travel to for basketball. But,
wow.
But anyways, just from traveling so much, I met a lot of different people, but...
Mm-hmm.
For me, I could always compare them to someone that I knew at home. You know, there's always like that crazy cousin down the street or that, you know, goofy uncle. And so when I met different people,
mm-hmm.
I felt like, okay, you're like my cousin Seth or you're like my uncle Chauncey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I really never met a stranger. And in terms of success and money, I think those two just bring out more of what's already in you. So if you're already paranoid, when you get money or as you acquire success, you become more paranoid.
Okay.
You know, but if you're down to earth, I think as you achieve success, you just become more down to earth. So,
right.
I mean, I often hear people say that they hear people who are successful or people who have money, they think they're very snooty and snotty. They were snooty and snotty before they got money. Money just brought out what was in them and magnified it times 10.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it wasn't a situation where I had to make sure that I wasn't this, I wasn't that. I just had to stay true to myself.
Right. And that's what impressed me the most because, you know, in this time now, where I am now in my life and being at the Summer League and being a semi-pro head coach and getting to know different guys, ex-NBAs or ex-NBA guys coming to Summer League, it's funny because, I can't always say that. And you're right, it is the place you grew up. But you're right, it's also how you're taught and how you're brought up because I told Jerry this story and it impressed me. And it was other than you, this by athlete probably impressed me more than anything is I remember it was a couple summers ago and we were at the Goodman and I was coaching. We won the championship that year, which is a very hard thing to do to win down there at that summer league because it's one of the tops in the nation. And I happened to have Baby Shaq on my team, who was a real good friend of mine. He was playing with me along with a team that I had that was already great, who had played together for years, and they were very good. I was getting my, what I always tell Jerry, I was getting my Phil Jackson on. All I had to do was say a little something about defense every now and then, but I didn't really have to say too much else. And so Kevin Durant jumped on our team, and this was right after he had gotten the Rookie of the Year, or he had won the scoring title for like the first time. And he was there that summer, and I'll never forget it. we were sitting there, and I called a timeout, and I was kind of, you know, telling the guys, look, y'all need to do this, and that. And it impressed me so much. And this summer, I really had it with, like, attitudes and athletes and dudes acting kind of crazy on other teams, not with mine so much, but just watching, just going, this is crazy. And I remember after the timeout, I was like, all right, you know, 1, 2, 3, defense, all right, gone. So everybody started going out. And I remember I put some guys in, and Kevin was sitting on the bench. And I never forget this. Kevin turned to me. He looked at me. He was like, Mac, he was like, coach me. And I was like, I am. He was like, nah, man, really, coach me. I ain't no prima donna. Like, coach me. You can talk. You can tell me what you need from me. Like, I'm not going to trip. And I'll be honest with you, that was so impressive to me. I remember putting on Facebook, like, how are you guys who aren't even at this level so egotistical that you can't be taken out the game, you can't do this? And here's a guy who's played at the highest level, but had the scoring type, just won the scoring title, like proved it, stamped it, and can say, nah. I mean, he literally, to be honest with you, to tell both of you, it was almost irritated because he just felt like I wasn't really saying too much. Like, I was saying things, but it's like, you're not coach, you're not saying nothing to me. And I was like, it wasn't like that. But I just say that's probably one of my, other than you and seeing the way you acted, that's probably, I have to say, that's probably one of my second most impressive things that I've ever seen a top athlete do. And you're right. And Kevin is a very well-grounded guy. Don't look for the spotlight. He's a very humble guy. But like you said, I think it's a combination of where you're from, and I think it's more parents than anything else. So I agree with you 110% on that. But I just wanted to say that is probably one of the things that I have to agree with you on, is that. And but that leads me to one question I do want to ask you this. And this is something that I've observed in all the years that I've been going down to Steubenville, going down to Ohio, because my grandmother, if Jerry didn't notice, my grandmother was down there. That's what me and Sylvia are probably related some way, either because my mother was born there. I got 4 or 5 aunts and uncles who were born there. Like I said, Mavis Johnson, who Sylvia's probably familiar with, grew up down there and all that stuff. So I was going down there in the summers as a kid. But what I wanted to ask you is this, and I just want to know if you observe the same thing. I observed that for some reason, I can't figure it out, is that sometimes it seems like the people who grew up in Steubenville grow up there, get out of there, come out, and go live either in the city or other places, and it seems like they always come back. Sometimes with their tail tucked between their legs, or they come back and just like, this is it. And it seems like they can't sometimes. I'm not saying everybody in Steubenville. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying a lot. And I've known a lot of people who have done that, and I don't understand kind of like why. And how could you make the adjustment, and some of these people can't? And I just ask that because that's just a mystery to me.
Actually, I have gone back to Steubenville with my tail tucked between my legs.
Okay.
Steubenville is a place where the cost of living is dirt cheap. I mean, you can buy a very nice house for $40,000, $45,000,
right,
and live well.
Really?
And
yeah,
I've done it. And so, anytime I've fallen on hard times, just because my roots are there,
mm-hmm.
My entire family just about is still there. My parents will always be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always home for me,
mm-hmm.
and that's always been a place where I can go back, regroup. I love the fact that, you know, you don't need a whole lot of money to survive there, so you can just save and, you know, regroup and go back to
mm-hmm.
whatever
true.
It is that you were doing. So I've been one of those people, and I was ashamed at first, but I actually enjoyed my time there. It was very peaceful. I was
mm-hmm.
surrounded by
that's
my
true.
Village. You know,
mm-hmm.
they say it takes a village to raise a child, and
right.
that's where my village is. You know, that's
right.
my safe place. Those are the people
uh-huh.
that knew me before I
uh-huh.
even started playing basketball.
Right.
So
right.
I got a different perspective about
okay.
it, Mac, but I think because the cost of living is so low, that's a place where you can survive when the economy is as low as it is right now, and
okay.
you can live a halfway decent life because it is so cheap in terms of real estate and everything else there.
Okay. That's a good answer to the question, because I was always mystified, like, why do you guys come? But I'm talking about young kids. You can see people like, I'm going back. And then sometimes I just found that sometimes they got into trouble, and I think they got all – sometimes I was like, well, why do y'all go up there and you can't do the same thing you do here, there? Like, that's different. But as you said, I just think it was what you said. The cost of living, definitely. I ain't going to lie. That's definitely low.
Is there a main industry around Steubenville, close to it?
There used to be the steel mills, and my father worked in a steel mill and retired from Wheeling Pittsburgh Steel Mill, and all of my family migrated there for work in the mill.
Right.
And once the steel mills started to go down is when the city's economy started to go down as well. So it's just unfortunate, you know, because it's hard to find a job there. You know, you either have the owner of McDonald's or you work at McDonald's, you know, but it's tough without the steel mills being there. Mm-hmm. So the city population has gone down a lot.
Yeah,
and so it's just a tough situation, but always a place that I'm very proud to call home.
Mm-hmm. I understand. You know, I understand your plight. Cause
so watch what you say, Mac.
No, I'm not saying that. Mac's from Weirton, okay?
So
no, that's not true. It does not say that on my birth certificate. You don't believe you,
but you lived in Weirton.
Yes, I lived in Weirton. I definitely did. But I was going to tell you that I understand your plight because with me pretty much being born and raised in Detroit, I know what it's like. When the auto industry went and everything tanked, which is still now, you know, I understand how the industry went down because, I left Detroit because I saw it coming. I saw that over 20 years ago. I saw it was coming. I was like, I already know it's coming. I don't know how I knew. Sorry to God, I said, I'm gone. And I left. But I feel sorry for my city. I look at it the same way. Now, the only difference is you can go back and be at peace. I go back. I got to watch where I'm at. So, I mean, that's just the difference. But, no, I'm not going to lie to you. I'll tell anybody. I love going back. When I go down there and see my daughter or if I go back down there for anything, you know, I go down there. I have family there. I go down there every now and then. And I'll be honest with you, it's a very peaceful place. It's just the fact that I've been a city boy so long that I get bored after 2 days and I'll be ready to come home. But as far as, like, quiet and peace, like, you can come down, you don't have to worry about nobody or worry about nothing and relax and rest. Man, I'm telling you, Weirton and Steubenville are probably about the two best places you can go. I definitely wouldn't go to Pittsburgh. So, you know, but, you know, you know me. I watch my mom about Steubenville. I know that's your home. I know that's your rock. You know what I'm saying? I don't mess with y'all. You know, go Big Red and all that necessary stuff. You know, I got you. Y'all got a dope school, though. One thing I will say about Steubenville, just so I want to tell you this, if nobody knows in the country, I can tell you this. Others outside of probably Texas, because I know some people from Texas, West Virginia and Steubenville, that area, that Steubenville, Weirton area, Jerry, is probably the, I'm telling you, football is it. That is football mania. Friday night football at high schools. Rivalry, rivalry, rivalry. I've never been to a more heated, more competitive, more raucous people than Steubenville or in Weirton at a football game. And if it's Wheeling versus Steubenville, it's a rivalry. I've seen people fist fight at these games. These are rivalry games, but I love being in the atmosphere. I will say that. And, you know, the greatest thing about Ohio that I love in that area is, and you would laugh about this, Jerry, but it's really true. They have, like, the best helmets and uniforms in the world. They all have joints that's, like, pro joints. I'm serious.
Is that right?
I swear to you. Like, what's the one I like? The one I like when I first got down there. One of the first ones I saw was Brooke. Brooke High School has these uniforms like the Green Bay Packers. Am I lying, Sylvia?
I don't think I've seen Brooks' uniforms.
You haven't? How can you?
No.
Okay, well, I know Steubenville has, I mean, Big Red has nice uniforms. All the teams down there have nice uniforms, but from what I've seen, they've all looked like pro uniforms. And then the helmets are just immaculate. They look like pro helmets. You can kind of look like, oh, that looks like that team, or that looks like that team. But you can't tell me there ain't no rivalries out there. You know that football. Y'all football town. If you ain't, I'm telling you, it's rivalries. I've said at football games and gone like, y'all really fist fighting over this? Like, but I've seen it. It's crazy. But outside of Texas, they're football fanatics. It's one of the great places. If you ever get a chance to go down, Jerry, ever, and watch a football game on a Friday night in Ohio or in West Virginia, is you'll have a ball. So, but anyway, one question I did want to ask you too, Sylvia, is that what are you looking for as the future? What do you want to do as far as the future? What are you looking forward to? I know you've closed one door of your career or what have you, and you've got other ones, but I just want to know what are your plans? What are you going to go forward with?
Mac, it's funny because I've been in this space where for the first time in my life I don't have a whole bunch of things that I want to acquire for myself. You know, I've always had that dream car or that dream house that I was working towards, and then I set goals so that I can achieve those things, you
uh-huh.
know, or
uh-huh.
a personal goal within my field, and I wanted to just reach a certain level, and I wouldn't stop until I, you know, won that championship or,
uh-huh.
you know, did a certain thing,
uh-huh.
whereas I'm in very unfamiliar territory where I'm retired now, I'm debt-free,
mm-hmm.
And so I'm actually making purpose-driven decisions. And so if it doesn't align with my purpose in life,
mm-hmm.
If it's not something that I'm passionate about,
mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in a good space where I am eating healthy, I'm getting plenty of rest for the first
mm-hmm.
time in my life. you know, so I'm just into health and fitness and just
mm-hmm.
being well.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently got married, and so, you know, just trying to be the best wife that I could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so so people keep saying, like, what's next, what's next, you know. I have dibbled and dabbled into commentating. You know, I've done that a little bit. I've done some color commentating on some radio shows. My goal is to eventually commentate on a major network, like a Big Ten network, Fox or ESPN. But I've been taking it really slow. I spoke to ESPN, and they said, you know, we just have you do two radio games, and then we just kind of throw you out there. And I felt
wow.
like I needed more than two radio games to correct
mm-hmm.
some of the things that I say. I say like, I say you know a lot, and so I want to correct some of those things. And I learned from your last show, Mac. You gave me the link where I could listen. I learned something about myself. I have a southern accent. I have
oh,
a
yes.
deep southern accent.
Oh yes.
I go in and out of it. When I get comfortable, I am
uh-huh.
from Beaumont, Texas, and I've
yeah.
never been to Beaumont. I feel wild. I sound like I'm from Beaumont, Texas.
Oh my God.
So that's a goal, you know. But that's more of a passion. It's something that I really enjoy doing. It's a different perspective for me to commentate.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone
mm-hmm.
from being a player to a coach on the sideline and then to a commentator where I'm critiquing and analyzing
mm-hmm.
what's going on. So
mm-hmm.
so that's been very different for me. But
mm-hmm.
what I like about it is I can control my schedule. I can book 20 games or
mm-hmm.
I can commentate 5 games.
Wow.
So as my life kind of changes, you know, or
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
if, you know, my husband's in the military, should we have to pack up and move somewhere else, I can
mm-hmm.
do it from wherever I'm from
mm-hmm.
into whatever capacity I want to do with that.
Wow.
And so as a personal goal, that's one of them. My mom actually had to remind me of a long-term goal, and she just reminded me of this last week, which is to open up a community center in Steubenville, a
wow.
real community center where kids are exposed to more than football and basketball in Steubenville.
Right.
I when I got to college, I took a communications class, and it was like an acting class.
Uh-huh.
And I learned that I was really, really good at acting. But I, that
you
was my first
that?
Time ever. No, I was
I
never close to
all
it.
The time.
I never took an acting class. And so had that been offered at my school or at a community
mm-hmm,
center,
mm-hmm.
I could have been the next Angela Bassett. I just was never exposed to that.
Yeah.
So I would like to open up a community center where kids are exposed to a lot of different things. There's after-school programs.
Mm-hmm,
there's
mm-hmm.
more than just kind of basketball and
mm-hmm.
and football to offer the kids. I am starting my camp back in Steubenville, Ohio this
Yay.
Summer. actually. My cousin Angie is back at Steubenville High School as the girls' basketball coach for the JV team, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're gonna do a camp there together. A lot of people have been asking me, when are you going to bring your camp back? When are you going to do your camp again? Well, it's going to be this summer.
Oh, that's great.
I would love to eventually host my camp at my community center someday. So that the community center is my long-term goal, and the basketball camp short-term goal that will happen this summer.
Write the vision, make it plain, so he that read it, they run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you already know what I'm saying. Write it down.
Exactly.
I know you. You probably got it written down on you already.
Oh, it's already written down.
I figured that. But I would love to see that in Steubenville, because the biggest thing I think, and I've lived there, so I pretty much and been going there for years, so I already know, but I think that would be a great thing. I'm telling you, you make sure you let me know when you cut the ribbon on that blicky, and I will be there. I'm serious. I'm dead serious, because I just think that is just a great thing, and, you know, more than just – I love the fact that you said it was more than football and just basketball, because I think we need to open up kids' minds. And my job, I don't know if you know what I do, but what I do is I'm a dedicated aide. What that means is I literally go to high school every day, and I have a kid with special needs, either physically impaired or mentally impaired, and I go to high school with them, and I'm there to help them, like, open books, read things, write things for them, whatever they need. And being in high school every day gives me a unique perspective on kids, you know, high schoolers. And one of the things that I was very impressed about, and I don't know if you guys have this, but I was shocked, and I was telling Jerry this. I was saying, man, I went around, I was touring high school, and this high school, you know, a lot of the high schools, I guess, have this now, but they have, like, barbering classes, they have hair stuff, they have places where they have now computers, they're linked with Microsoft, and they're linked with not only Microsoft, but they're also linked with Oracle. And with Oracle, they're actually teaching the kids how to do programming, how to do systems analysts, all this stuff. And I couldn't believe that these people actually come out with, they can come out and be a barber, a licensed barber, a licensed cosmetologist, a licensed programmer, all this stuff with a real job out of high school. And I think if you had a community center that offered those kind of things where somebody could come in and actually get a skill, you know, or computers or things like that, more than just the athletes, I would love to see that. Definitely, I would love to see that. And if I can help in any way, I would love to do that.
Yeah, I think it would be a good thing for the community, as well as create more job opportunities in the city. You know, there are a lot of convicted felons that have a hard time finding work, but, you know, are very good at sports, you know, and have now turned their lives around. They've already, you know, paid the price for whatever crime they committed, and now they're ready to move on, but just have a hard time doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is an arena where, you know, they could get involved in a community and just, fix their reputation in the community,
mm-hmm.
and get
mm-hmm.
some work experience to put on their resume, so that
mm-hmm.
if they want to do another job, they now have that in their background.
Okay.
Well, so you're in,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Zach. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jerry. No, go ahead, Jerry.
So you're a newlywed, and you're right now you're basically based down in Louisville, Kentucky. I don't know if I asked you before, and this is going off subject from what were you talking about, but I had to ask this question because of the things that you are planning to do.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'm going to ask you, where did you meet your husband? And he's a military man, and I'm not knocking his lifestyle, but his lifestyle is different from your lifestyle. So how
mm-hmm.
did those two lifestyles happen to meet, and you happen to marry a military man?
We actually met through a mutual friend, and then we dated basically online. I was in
mm-hmm.
Boston, and he was in Toma, Wisconsin, actually
mm-hmm.
at the time. And the first time we actually met was at an airport in Wisconsin. I was going to be in the area. Yeah, I was coming to the area. I told him I was going to be there. He met me there. And we just kind of met for the first time. But it was perfect because we would have never met each other otherwise. Because I was in Boston, he was here. I was on a 4-year contract. He's been in the military for over 25 years.
Right.
So, you know, the thing was, how do we make this work? Once we got together and we said, okay, we want to be in each other's lives for the rest of our lives. How do we do this? You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, long story short, I told the whole story the last time, but I ended up resigning from coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Actually. Mm-hmm. I developed a aneurysm on the right side of my brain.
Right.
The doctors told me this last March. So I had to make a decision. You know, they said, you know, the whistles and the lights and the screaming, you know, is causing this. So I made a decision to resign from coaching, and I got married in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, this past August.
Really?
And now here I am in Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
So I'm a military wife. Along with being a newlywed, we actually live in Vine Grove, Kentucky, which is very, very royal area. I don't have neighbors for miles and miles away.
What?
We have, it's very similar to Wintersville, Ohio. We have creeks on the side of the road as opposed to sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our own septic tank, so that to just give you a visual of how country it is. It is extremely country. So here, I'm a social butterfly. I'm an entrepreneur, and I am coming from Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm plopped in Vine Grove, Kentucky, and my husband goes to work all day, and I'm at home by myself, or actually with our dog, Luke. And I'm thinking, what am I supposed to do now? Like, what do I do all day?
Right.
I actually had to teach myself how to, you know, just be quiet, be still, sit down, you know, and relax. And that was something that was very foreign to me. So it gave me a really good opportunity to just kind of learn about the military and that lifestyle and how I need to be supportive as a military wife.
Mm-hmm.
I think a military spouse is one of the most difficult jobs in the military.
That's right.
Because there's a lot to come with it, you know, and they have a lot of support groups. They have a lot of activities for the spouses. I do Zumba almost every day. So that's how I keep in shape.
Okay.
Occasionally I'll play pickup with some of the guys on base, along with my husband. He's actually 6'6", and he was on a basketball scholarship as well.
I'm not surprised.
So we make a heck of a team, Max. He likes to shoot the three. You know, he's a big guy. He can shoot it from half court.
Stop.
And I still like to get on the block and chin the ball and just elbow everybody with my elbows on the spin move. So.
You know what? That brings up a perfect question I want to ask you. Now, let me ask you this. When you two play basketball, is he protective of you?
Very much so. we go at each other, but he won't. When I go play, he's at work when I go play with the guys.
He'll
try and peek his head in to make sure nobody's, you know, roughing me up or
that's
being really physical.
Funny.
And I'm like, babe, I can take care of myself, you know. I play pickup all the time with guys before I met you, and I'm a big girl, you know. He's like, I just want to make sure. So he's in there giving everyone the eye.
The funny thing is that's completely opposite because, like I said, Baby Shaq is used to be with Ann One as my friend. And one of the things I always laugh at is because I used to go play basketball with him all the time. And his wife, he got married 2 weeks ago. His wife played for Kentucky for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. Now, when they play, it's so different because a lot of times I think he's going to say something. He don't say half the stuff he do. Like, he lets her play. If they play physical with her, do whatever, that's fine. I just think the level, it's just funny because I just asked that because him, I was like, you ain't going to say nothing. He'd be like, Danielle, all right, she'll fight a man. I ain't worrying about her. He'd be like, she'll be fine. She'll look out for herself. And it's just funny how it's so different. And I don't know if it's just because of that, but when you said that, I just thought, like, is he protective of you? Because I thought he probably wouldn't be, but I guess it just depends on the man. But I would.
Well, you know, my husband, Reggie, is a protect and provide type of guy, and he's in the military. So Okay. That's mm-hmm. And he's military police at that.
All right.
That's
okay.
What he does. He
okay.
protects
okay.
with
now
his family and his
now
home.
Okay, now.
He comes from that space.
Okay, I got it now. Now I got it. And okay, that's why he's that way. Well, that's good.
So,
I'm glad to hear that. Go ahead, Jerry.
So the reason I asked you that question, where you met and you're a newlywed, you do these speaking engagements. You're on the road every now and then, and you're a newlywed. It's got to be a pretty good understanding being a military wife and being the type of personality you are and you want to do a lot of things. There's got to be some type of balance that you two have to be able to do the things that you want to do outside at home.
Reggie's very understanding. He understands my personality. I'm very
mm-hmm.
outgoing, and he's introverted. So mm-hmm. it actually works because there's times where he actually needs to just go in the man cave, read his magazines and his books, and watch Moonshiner and Gold Rush, you know, and the mm-hmm. National Geographic Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I have times where I just need to go out and hang out with girlfriends and just have a weekend retreat somewhere where we get
right.
our nails polished and our toenails done. And so I get him, and he gets me. So when I go, you know, I commentated the North Carolina Duke game, women's
mm-hmm.
game. So that was just my way to get away. I saw all my old teammates. We hung out. I went around campus. I got
mm-hmm.
some new gear, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm just in my element, you know.
Wow.
Meanwhile, he's here in the man cave. He's watching, you know, NBA basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to the movies by himself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a great time. I had a great time. I
yep.
come back. We've missed each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we just go from there. So
right,
it actually
right.
works.
Can you tell people, please, that God did not intend for all, which the world has it backwards. I always say this. I've said this to quite a few people. I say, why do you people always go out, some of my friends, I say, why do you always go out and look for people that are just like you? That's not what it is. It was always opposites attract. I say, God made people mainly to have certain differences, and usually the differences are compatible. What you don't have, he has. What he has, you know, what he doesn't have, you have. And it works that way. And this is a perfect example of what I've always been trying to tell people. I was like, it's not always, but I think where a lot of people get it wrong, especially with marriage and relationships, they think if he doesn't think like me or like what I like or do what I like, we can't be together. And I keep trying to tell people all the time, like, no, you can be compatible. You know, you just got to, you know, you got to really get to know each other, which I think a lot of people don't do. And you just got to get to know the person. You have to have good communication, and you have to understand each other. That's the biggest thing. Like, I gave a friend of mine, I think, a book on, the five love languages.
Five love
I told
languages.
People, you got to know that. You got to read that book if you have any intention of getting married, because it tells you exactly what you need to know about understanding somebody. And, you know, but anyway, I didn't mean to go on that tangent, but I'm just saying, I was just glad to hear you say that, because for people out there who think that you're supposed to be just alike, it's never was in God never made us to be like that, especially as far as relationships or marriage.
Well, that's
so anyway.
That's the reason I asked the question, and she gave me the answer
mm-hmm.
that I was looking for. So mm-hmm. the listeners, it's all about balance.
Yep,
so.
That's what it is.
I will say this: I don't know, Mac, about God not intending us to be like the person that we're with. I don't know where that scripture is located, but. I think it depends on your.
No, what I mean by that is,
I think
mean,
it depends on your personality.
Right.
You know, there's some people who are very, very outgoing,
right.
and they want to be with other people who are outgoing,
mm-hmm.
so they can entertain. They can go
right.
to social networks, and that's fine for them.
Mm-hmm.
For my husband and I, the first few months of our marriage,
mm-hmm.
I will admit it was very, very difficult because he's introverted. He doesn't offer, he doesn't volunteer information about himself.
Mm-hmm.
He expects me to learn him like he learned me.
Right.
And so he's very observant.
Mm-hmm.
He watches everything that I like to eat, I like to drink.
Mm-hmm.
He knows my favorite everything because he just
mm-hmm.
watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm so busy talking, I'm not paying attention to what he's eating and drinking. So one day we just stopped and he asked me all these questions I didn't know. But he knew all the answers, you know, when he posed those same questions to me.
Right.
And so so for the first maybe 3 months, and this is why it was good that I wasn't working, that I am retired, because I had time to just kind of learn him and, you know, what time he gets home and how he likes his food cooked and how he likes his towels folded and, you know, how I have to roll up his shirt, you know.
Exactly.
Because those are things that he won't, as an introvert, just come out and volunteer about himself. It's hard to work when you're opposites, but it can be very beneficial once you work through those differences and celebrate those differences.
Right. But that's what I mean. When I say opposites, what I mean by that is you're not going to – the world says you're – the world looks – most of the world looks at marriage as I have to find somebody who – is like me, likes the same things, like that. And when I say that, God makes us all it says we're uniquely and wonderfully made, or we have different parts of our personality that aren't like the person that 9 times out of 10 we're going to meet. You don't like everything your husband likes. He don't like everything you like. But it's compatible. So that's what I kind of meant. I wasn't saying that. When I say opposites, I'm saying there are things that, like for me, I like to sit up and watch basketball stuff all day. You know, my fiance doesn't like that. She'll look at it. She'll sit there and look at it, but she doesn't look at it like I do. She'll get up and go in the room and watch American Idol, and I'll sit out here and watch a basketball game. But she doesn't mind it. It works because if I'm talking about something, she knows what I'm talking about, but she's not into it like I am. So I'm saying typically the world thinks that if I'm a – like for me, if I didn't – like back when I knew you, if somebody had asked me, I would have said, oh, she's going to meet somebody who's a basketball player, period. You know, I just thought that. Because that's what I used to think then. But when I realized it's not necessary you're going to, you know, guess the only thing I did get right is I knew the guy would be talking. I knew that part. That part I was like, because I know she ain't going to be no, with no midget. That just ain't going to look right. So, but I'm saying other than that, you know, I kind of knew that. But, you know, you illustrated that for me. And that's what I kind of mean. Like you did the work to understand each other. That's what I'm talking about. You did the work to understand each other. Because God made you different than He made him. But they can work together, and that's what I mean when I said, you know, opposites attract. Is that, you know, what, like you said, what you have works for you, and there's times when you need to, you know, the outgoing works. You know, it's like, okay, we're with this couple, you can carry it where he won't, and then there's times when he's in certain places where you're like, I ain't doing that, he'll do it. So, you know, that's what I kind of meant. But I'm impressed. I'm still impressed. So, I mean, you're doing your thing. I mean, you thought this out. You just, I don't know. You grown up. You're doing your thing. So, but I would love to see you do the ESPN thing. But let me ask you this: what did you tell them when they said that? Did you say you wanted more games before they threw you out there, or how did you rectify that when you said I'm not ready to do 2 and thrown out there?
I just kind of said that to myself. Listened to what they said. Because they only have you do 2 radio games and then they just kind of throw you on TV, because of that, they only hire a certain type of person. I mean, if you think about the commentators, they've all been coaches or players to some degree, or either is the master of basketball trivia. You know, they have so much basketball knowledge and a very high basketball IQ. So I just know myself, you know, and I know what I need to work on and what I need to improve on. And so I'm the type of person, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it well, and, you know, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. So me knowing what my weaknesses, what my flaws are, I just feel personally like I need more games. So I just kind of said that to myself and just, you know, rolled up my sleeves and just started to do as many games as I could right here in this area.
Oh, okay. So I was getting ready to ask you, how do you work on those things like changing your accent, things like, what do? You do exercises? I mean, how do you do that?
I'm actually going to take a class. I've taken a class before, a communications class at North Carolina, where I've corrected these things before, but I'm a little rusty because I'm now 40 years old. I'm just now working within my major. So I need to go back to class. But in the meantime, I watch basketball games with the TV on mute.
Mm-hmm.
And I commentate and I record myself and I play it back and I listen to what I said. I do good until I'm thinking about what I want to say. So sometimes I have a hard time just kind of ending my sentences because you got to keep it short and sweet. So, Mac, you could never, ever be a commentator because...
I know I couldn't. That's why I got my own show. I ain't being no commentator. I couldn't because I would get in too much trouble. And Jerry, let me tell you this. Jerry and Vic and Black, the other guys on the staff here, they know how I am. That's why I call the thing No Chaser. I can't be in those kind of environments because I've been and said something and I'd be done in one game because I've been and said something I wasn't supposed to. It would be the truth, but they'd be like, nah, you got to go. You can't say that. You know, I'm like, but it's the truth. You know, I'm not a politically correct person. Like I said, I'm you know, and that's why I have my own radio show and I do my thing. But it also makes me good at doing just this. But no, commentating, you're right. That ain't me. I'm a talker, and I'm gonna say what I'm gonna say, and I'm gonna let you have it how you want, and you don't like it, too bad. That's just me. But you know me.
Right.
I've been that way for, you know, I'm a trash talker. That's me. I'm the best one. Only one I met better might be you, because you could always back it up. Damn it.
I find that very hard to believe, because she seems so soft-spoken and so laid-back that I can't see you turning on a switch and automatically talking a whole lot of trash and being brash about it.
I don't want her to answer that. Let me tell you how she does it. Let me tell you how she does it.
Okay.
This is what bothers you. This is what used to bother me. Mm-hmm. She doesn't yell and scream and, like, say stuff and, like, she's not that type of person. She's the type of person like the Larry Bird. You know how they say they used to, like, shoot the shot and be, like, in your face? You know, she's that type. She's going to be calm about it. She's going to be, you know, she's going to talk trash with you. She'll say what she needs to say to you and let you know. But she's not a – you won't get enjoyment out of getting her because it's like, okay, that's nice, little boy. You know, let me go back down here and I'm going to show you something. I'm going to back you down. And then she do it, and then she may say something, but 9 times out of 10, she does say something, you know, she'll let you know. But it's a lady, like, it's irritating because it ain't what you want. You want the reaction. And she very rarely gives you, like, the reaction of most people on a basketball court. She's very calm. She'll say it, but you'll be like, why can't I get her to scream and holler and, like, flip out? But she don't. And that's what bothers me. But she'll talk trash, trust me. Oh, trust me. She'll back it up.
I was just explaining to someone, they were talking about Jordan being one of the best trash talkers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, at the University of North Carolina, it's an art that we learn. And so our practices were very heated. I mean, we prefer to play games than practice every day.
Really?
But we were allowed to talk trash to each other. If we shot a free throw, it was under pressure. There were no free shots in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody had to line up on the baseline. One person would get up to shoot a shot. And I did this with every player I ever coached. And so when you got to the line, people could talk about your mama. They could talk about you. If you had one lazy eye, they'd talk about your lazy eye, whatever. I mean, they could just dig in. And you had to learn how to channel the frustration or whatever you were feeling into a basket.
Wow.
That's how you got even. That's how you trash talk back to them.
Is it still that way now?
I believe so, yeah. I can't imagine Coach Hatchell changing at this age, but so it was a very intense and not hostile, but very intense atmosphere every single day. And we were actually trained to smell frustration, to smell fear, to smell anger. So if our opponents were defeated or frustrated, they start yelling at each other, that's when we knew to dig in. Like, we could see it miles away. If you were scared, we could see it in your eyes in the warm-ups. And so we learned how to talk trash, but when you talk trash back to us, it just made us perform better. Like, we were
mm-hmm.
trained to elevate
mm-hmm.
to another level.
Mm-hmm.
So what it did was it made our opponents afraid to talk back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So now we got you. Basketball is mental. So now
we're
in your head and we're talking to you. But you're afraid. Like, every time you try to talk to us, we're going on a 10-0 run. And so the key to trash talking is you got to score. You can't talk trash and not score or not play
right.
well.
Right.
And so that gave us the upper hand. Like, we were always in control. But it was a mental thing, and we were taught that. I mean, it's an art. And it was never about fighting. I mean, we would shake hands with the other team, hug them. We knew most of them. Hug them, go out to eat with them.
See, that's women. See, that's the women.
that's the men, too.
No,
that's
okay.
Vince
you
Carter.
Say that.
That's
yeah.
Michael Jordan. That's Jerry Stackhouse. If you meet any
of them.
That's
probably true.
Like
that's
this,
probably true.
That's Rasheed Wallace. Rasheed's going to talk the biggest trash, but after the game, he's going to take you out to eat, bring you over to his house, play PlayStation with you. He got one of the biggest hearts ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's yeah, but he can talk some trash. I'm glad to see him back in the NBA. I'm glad to see him back. I wish he was really, like, healthy in his prime still, because I used to love watching him, especially me being a Pistons fan. I owe him everything. That's my dude. I love Rasheed forever for coming and giving me a championship. But that's just as interesting. Now, I'm going to say something that's probably going to be controversial, but I'm going to say
anyway. Here we go.
That's right. Here's my theory. My theory on Duke, North Carolina, which is like I really think that it is the it's only one rivalry I think that's better than North Carolina and Duke.
Which is what?
Michigan, Ohio State. I would say either they're even or they're dang close. Those are the two I think biggest rivalries, I think, in sports, because when I watched the HBO documentary, plus living in Detroit, pretty much born and raised, I sit and go like, Lord, have mercy. This is not a joke. Because I grew up, I can't, you know, and I'm not going to sit and mince words. I can't stand Buckeyes. I hate Ohio State. I do. And that's just the way it is. I ain't going to like them. Don't like none of them. But anyway, as I said, here's my theory. And I wanted to ask you about this. I noticed that every time, and I've always had this theory, and I don't know if Jerry's ever heard me say it, but I think that the reason that when Duke and North Carolina, the men's team, get beat, it's always by teams that have rougher inner city players that don't care nothing about them or the name or the history on them. I always have had that theory. And I wanted to know if you agree with that theory. Because every time I see him, like when I saw him get beat by Miami, when I saw Duke get torched, I think that's why Duke and North Carolina has been successful through the years. But I think in the recent things with Kentucky, with Louisville, with those two coaches, they go to the inner city and go get the kids with second chances or the kids that's really gifted that ordinarily Carolina and Duke won't pick up, and I think that's why when they do get beat real bad, they always seem to get beat by inner city players. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the way I observe it. So I'll let you chastise me and clean me up. So. I already know she's going to come across.
No, I'm not going to beat you up. But I would say that, and I know this from being a head coach at Boston College, I always wanted the inner city very athletic players.
Mm-hmm.
However, at Boston College, the type of player that the school drew and, more importantly, was able to retain. Like, we did not have the infrastructure to retain an inner-city kid because there wasn't a whole, like, when they came on a visit, they didn't see a lot of themselves there.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
So... So it was very difficult to recruit a certain type of player. So I had to recruit the best player for Boston College.
Okay.
As an assistant coach at the University of North Carolina, I had to recruit the best player for North Carolina. Duke is even
worse.
I would say a step further than North Carolina, whereas you know, and then you have to consider just academically, they have to have certain grades, certain SAT scores to get in such prestigious schools. So there's certain players that we just couldn't retain.
Okay.
And so, and then I know that once you get to North Carolina on the men and women's side,
right,
scouting reports is to another level.
Wow.
My scouting reports that I had to do as a coach was like a 8-page thesis.
Whoa.
If you scratched on the right side, we knew where it itched. You know, like,
man,
we scouted your every strength and weakness.
Wow.
And so athleticism can't be scouted.
Right.
The inner city players, those are the teams that Duke and Carolina struggle with, because sometimes they don't know what they're going to do until they get mid-air, and they might change their mind and throw it up with their left hand and it goes in.
Right.
So there's no – and so Duke and Carolina spends a lot of time prepping for the other team.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, when you have teams that are very athletic, they don't really run any plays. When the play breaks down, they just want to freestyle. You cannot scout that.
Right.
Therefore, those teams don't have the upper hand anymore.
Right.
But Carolina and Duke is all about fundamentals. Those players are going to be very fundamentally sound. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, that's what they practice against every day. They're practicing against things that are very fundamental. So it's hard when there's a whole team full of athleticism where there's no fundamentals, just athleticism. They're going to get beat by that team because they don't practice against that. They haven't seen that. They're not that.
Right.
And I think that's why you see that.
And that's what I kept saying, because I just noticed that every time they did them, I remember Cincinnati used to give people fits. I mean, I'd just be like, man, these dudes are straight Sunday afternoon out at the park, you know, guys that just they don't care nothing about you. They don't care about what's on your chest. They don't care about where you came from, your pedigree. They just like, we going to dog you. And then a lot of them, I think, come in with kind of a chip anyway, with the same thing that Jalen Rose kind of said when he was at Michigan when they played against Duke or North Carolina. I think a lot of players come in with that whole thing like, I would love to just, you know, bust these dudes up and just beat them. And I think that automatically takes it up to another level. Guys just want to do that. But let me ask you this, I asked you this, do you think that with Kentucky doing what it's doing now, the recruitment, and with the players that they're recruiting, and Louisville and them winning, not saying Duke is going to fall off the face of the earth or North Carolina. I think North Carolina's fell off afar, and I don't know when they're going to get it back, but it seems like they can't get that team. And right now it seems like Kentucky is just chewing up everybody and spitting them out in the NBA, and they're just getting these kids, even the, you know, those type of kids. And I know when I say that, I mean Calipari. And what's his name? I can't remember his name for Louisville. Who am I talking about, Jerry?
Rick Pitino
recruit different types of people, and they bring them to these schools. So let me ask you this. Do you think that Duke and North Carolina will ever change when it gets down to where, let's say, Kentucky starts to dominate, which they have kind of in a little way, but if it gets to a point where it shifts, where they're down or whatever, do you ever think see a day when North Carolina or Duke will shift a little bit? Now, I don't think they'll ever do that, but I'm saying shift as far as, you know, the players that they look for.
Like I said, there's certain boundaries that they're recruiting within, you know. So
right.
if the admissions rules change at their school,
mm-hmm. Well,
you know, in terms of what type of student they can accept and get in,
mm-hmm.
Like every recruit, if their grades are borderline, they have to meet with admissions. And then admissions say, all right, thumbs up, you can get this kid in, or thumbs down, you can't get this kid in. They have a learning disability, or they don't have the test grades. So until that changes, and as far as I know, NCAA is cracking down even more on SATs and your grades and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't see it changing anytime soon because of the caliber of student that those schools are allowed to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're under such a watchful eye because
mm-hmm.
of the popularity of the school. You know,
mm-hmm.
like NCAA is always watching them, and, you know, and North Carolina's been under investigation. And so they really have to go to the letter by the book in terms of, you know, what they're accepting into their program.
Okay, because
in every blue moon, there's an exception. Every blue moon, like there is a player that is, you know, very athletic, like a freak of nature who is extremely bright, you know, and they get that player.
Right.
And I think it's important, you said that North Carolina is down right now. I think it's important to say about Duke and Carolina, they send a lot of players to the league. And
they
so
do.
Every year they're rebuilding. They've got to find that next star, that next, you know, they're starting all over again with freshmen and sophomores. And so it's very difficult to rebuild a team after you've lost three or four players to the NBA.
No, that's true, because look at North Carolina. Look at Kentucky, what they had last year. That's almost their whole starting five left. I was just like, wow, these dudes left, so, you know.
And so then, you know, if you're sending a class to the league, you should be able to recruit more players saying, okay, when they leave, it's going to be your turn, but those guys got to wait their turn.
Yeah.
And nowadays, kids are being so highly recruited that they're not willing to wait. If they don't get to play by that first year, they're transferring out because their dream is to play in the league. So now you're messing up my college experience. I got goals and dreams, so I'm gone.
Those
days of just sitting and waiting, those days are over because just in terms of recruiting, there's a coach just saying, hey, you're not happy over there? Over here in Michigan, you'll play.
Well,
and that player's like, really?
And that's a good point because that was my next point, but you got to it before I did, was that I was saying that I thought that Kentucky is the victim of their own success. And now they've had another great number one recruiting class. And I said, I think it's just the fact that everybody's parent or the kids are looking to go to a place where I'll get exposure, I'm one and done, and I can go into the league. And I've been saying that for a long time. And it's funny because everybody, I hear some people say, well, why does Kentucky keep getting all these people? I said, well, look at it. They just won a championship two seasons ago. I said, they sent the whole five there. Before that, they sent John Wall. They sent DeMarcus Cousins. They send people to the league. Not to say North Carolina and Duke don't, but they're different types of players. And these players don't intend to stay. I mean, players now don't intend to stay for 4 years. I mean, you know, if you get a four-year player, you're like, you're doing great because they just don't do it. So, you know, but I guess one of my last questions is I just want to ask you this, is that do you believe, and this is coming from, this is for athlete, and I couldn't wait to ask an athlete this, a basketball player especially, do you believe, what is your view on colleges paying players in college? What is your stance on that?
Great question.
I think they should, and I could be biased because I'm a former student athlete, but I think the schools make a lot of money off of the players, off of the games, off of the sale of their, you know, merchandise that has these players' jersey numbers or, you know, what have you, and I think that the players should be compensated for that. They're trying to pass a rule, and it kind of went away, but I think they're bringing it back before their board, where each player will get like a $2,000 kind of stipend, and that's like a huge deal to a broke college student who's on scholarship. But when you're on scholarship, you can't work. So how does these players buy their toilet paper and their shampoo and their soap and their, you know, there's things that they need that if their parents aren't sending them money, they just don't have. You know, I have players in Boston who didn't have a coat. They don't have a coat to wear.
Wow.
And it's a blizzard outside.
That's
like, you know,
12
inches of snow outside. They have no boots and no coat, no earmuffs or anything, you know. And so I think that they should be compensated. How much, you know, I don't know. But I think that it should be something. And then I think if that happened, you know, some of the student athletes wouldn't struggle so much and wouldn't feel like their back was against the wall and they have to make a decision to play in the NBA so early. Because I think the college experience is good for just maturing. I can't even imagine if I had a son, I can't even imagine letting him go to the NBA straight from high school, because it's not even really about what you're actually learning in the classroom. It's just about the experience of being out on your own for the first time.
Yep.
If you're a student athlete, you've got to balance parties and school and, you know, the opposite sex, you know, and dating and all of that. And that's a part of your growth and maturity before you get to the league, because now that's multiplied times 50. You know, NBA
guys
have women just show up at their door butt naked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Had they gone to college, they would have experienced that on some lower level and learned how to deal with that under the guidance
exactly.
of a coach.
Right.
Of a coach
right.
that's kind of a little more hands-on, you know, babysitting a little bit more. They're not doing that in the NBA. You're on your own.
No.
You're a grown man.
Right, exactly.
So I think they need that experience, and if they compensated these guys a little bit more, I think they would be less prone to kind of chase money and be so quick to jump towards the money. That's
okay.
my theory.
Okay, well, let me ask this question, okay?
Okay.
You're talking about men's basketball. I'm talking about women's basketball, okay? Say mm-hmm. women's basketball, they're a basketball player. You think they should be compensated? They should stay in school? Because some of these women come out of school earlier than their senior year. They come out in their junior year or something like that. You've been in the WNBA. You just talked about women showing up at men's doors buck naked, okay? You know where I'm going with this. Has that type of thing happened women in the WNBA?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, absolutely.
Seriously?
It's a different – absolutely. It doesn't happen to the same level that it does
on
the NBA side,
right.
But I've had groupies. I've had stalkers. I've had numerous stalkers. I've had police officers escort me onto the court, back to my car, check under my car for bombs, and then let me get in my car and go home.
Oh, my goodness.
Really?
And so it's on the women's level as well. The only difference, you know, the reason why I was saying men's basketball, I feel like they should be compensated.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like women should be compensated too, but we don't have that battle of leaving school early to pursue
mm-hmm.
money to
mm-hmm.
take care of our families, take care of ourselves, because
right.
you have to complete 4 years of eligibility before you can play professional basketball for women.
Oh, really?
Oh, they never knew it was different.
Yeah, you can't just go early after your sophomore year and say, I'm going pro. You have to go, if you come out early, you have to go overseas and grow up. Like I'm saying, the guys need to do in college. Like, you have to go overseas and play so that you can experience life before you go to the WNBA.
Wow.
You learn how to balance those things. If not in college, you're going to learn somewhere.
Well, then I don't understand this. I'm flabbergasted. I really didn't know
too.
That. It's a double standard that the men can leave anytime they want past their freshman year, and the women have to stay 4 years.
Yeah,
and then if they leave before their graduation, then they have to play overseas.
I did not know that.
That's an eye opener, and that is definitely a double standard.
I'm surprised women haven't rose up and been like, "Hey, yo, wait
right.
a minute now."
Right,
I'm really surprised.
It is, but it's not. I think if a woman challenged it, like say if Brittany Griner wanted to go to the league last year,
mm-hmm.
she
mm-hmm.
could have challenged it, went to court, and won because
mm-hmm.
it's happened for men over the years. And I think they're honestly waiting for someone to challenge it. You know.
Okay.
However, it's ludicrous to leave your college scholarship. Boston College scholarship was worth $45,000 a year.
Whoa.
It's insane to leave your scholarship worth $45,000 a year to go play in a WNBA where you're going to make $55,000 if you're the first pick, first round.
Right.
With a 3-year rookie salary cap on you.
Right.
So it's almost beneficial for you to get your, like, we're not, the WNBA is not millionaires. They're thousandaires.
Right, I understand that.
And you
right,
almost
right.
make more money in college than you do in the pros. So it's no one's going to challenge it, I don't think. That's why you haven't seen it in this many years because
right.
it doesn't make sense. You need
okay.
your diploma. You need your degree
right.
so that you can – and the WNBA is only for 3 months out of the year. So for the rest of the year –
that's
people
true.
Work
that is
a regular
true.
Job.
I forgot about
whether
that.
Whether that's
yeah.
go overseas or they may be teachers, they may
that's
be nurses. I was a coach. I coached and played at the same time. So you go back to your job after the WNBA. That's your real job.
Wow.
The WNBA is really kind of like a summer hobby.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
That's your summer job.
Wow. Well, let me say this. I had some goofy plan in my head, but that $2,000 sounds like a great thing. I would agree with that. The only thing I was saying football and basketball, but the only thing I would add to what you said when they were saying to give them a $2,000 stipend, I would take a certain amount of the money, a certain portion, and give it to them, which would be the $2,000, but I would give them a certain portion that you would put into an account for a player during their whatever it is, whether they're a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever, and then when they leave, that money that's in that account goes with them. And the reason why, and the only reason, there was only one reason why I came up with that plan and I said that was because if a kid gets hurt and can't make it to the league, or he gets injured, can't make it to the league, at least he has hopefully a degree, or at least has something in his pocket that he can start off with or help him while he, you know, whatever happens, it's something. It's better than getting injured and then it's like, and I know in college sometimes they take the scholarships, but when you get hurt, but then I know some places are nicer than others and they let you finish. But
no, you cannot take a scholarship just because someone got hurt.
Right. Okay.
You can't take their scholarship.
Okay. Well, maybe I got those details wrong, but
they may not play on a team.
Right.
But they're still a scholarship athlete.
Okay. Okay. And that's
so they basically feel like if you get hurt and you can't make it to the league, you got your education.
Okay.
You got $54,000 a year education.
Right.
So you did walk away with something.
No,
I don't know if they'll go for the extra money in the bank account. Like $2,000 is really not a lot of money.
Throughout the course of the year,
I don't think too many people will just put that money in a bank unless their parents are wealthy. Those
mm-hmm.
players will
mm-hmm.
because they don't need it. But
mm-hmm.
the players who need it,
mm-hmm.
they're going to spend that on just eating. You know, like sometimes we'll have recruits on campus, and the recruits, after we've had a meal for them, they may want to go bowling or skating or to
mm-hmm.
a movie. They're
mm-hmm.
on their own. So
wow.
then they like to do that as a team so that the recruit feels a part of the team. They're interacting
mm-hmm.
with them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has to come out of their pocket. And that
wow.
happens every weekend there's recruits. They
wow.
bring in recruits every single weekend at the beginning of the school year.
Wow.
So this is just a lot of money just that,
mm-hmm.
you know, the team is requiring them to do, but they don't have money to pay for that. So a lot of the players just go and sit. They don't bowl. They don't eat. They just sit at a table and socialize with everybody else, hoping somebody offer them an appetizer. And that kind of stuff happens every single day.
Are you serious?
You know?
That doesn't make sense.
And
like
then, you know, I see it from the tail end of it. I'm 40 years old, and when it rains, my husband and I, you got to hear the noises we make trying to get out the bed in the morning because our knees ache when it's raining or when it's cold outside, you know? So, like, we're going to pay a price
right.
for just trying to be tough and suck it up and play with injuries and play
right.
through injuries, and that,
right.
you know, that's what you're taught to do, you know?
Right, right.
And there's nobody here to say thank you for sucking it up, Sylvia. It's just I'll figure out how to get my knees warmed up. I sometimes have to stretch. My first, like, motion out of the bed is, like, let me stretch while I pull a muscle going down the steps, you know?
Wow,
so,
really?
So I think there should be some compensation, especially the WNBA has no pension.
Oh my
Dr.
goodness.
J is still being paid to this day. I get nothing for my aches and pains.
What is going
Magic
on?
Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, they're still getting paid a pension by the NBA to this day.
What is going on with these? What is going on with? I just can't believe that no women are just like. Let me ask you this: do you guys have a union?
We have a union, but it's connected to the NBA union.
Oh, jeez.
It's all one union, kind of.
But if it's connected to the NBA union, why don't you have some type of pension? Do you have a health
that
plan?
That doesn't make sense.
We have the league has insurance,
but
there is no pension. So once you go, you're gone. That's it. That's it for you.
Oh my goodness! That's highway robbery.
But you know, they feel like, you know, we don't have to have this league for you guys. You know, you're lucky that it's going on this long. Actually, the WNBA does not make money for the NBA. They're still in the red. Wow. Never made $1 for the NBA yet.
Wow.
So this is the reason why they're saying, okay, you're not going to get a pension. Because
wow.
we just, you know, we're taking our losses, but we want to see this happen. We want to support you. We'll let you use our venues,
mm-hmm.
but that's it.
And why do you, let me
and
ask
with
you
the,
why
mm-hmm.
do you think they don't make money during the red? I'm just asking.
How many games
question.
Have you been to this year, Mac?
Well, that's true, too. But they but
and
what
you
I
love basketball and
I
you
know.
Love basketball, but you
but
haven't
I don't,
been to a
but
game.
I don't, but
so
I don't
that's,
go to
that's
NBA
what it
games
is.
Unless look, but I don't go to NBA games. That's my one of my NBA friends come through the town. And I ask them for some tickets. I ain't paying all that money for them dad blasted tickets. I that's why
right,
I like the summer league.
You
I
watch?
Get to see. But you're right. But would you say?
Yeah, and even though you don't go to the NBA games, they're still
right.
packed.
No, that's
so
true.
People aren't going to support it. When you see games on TV and it looks packed, we actually went to the mall and gave out hundreds of tickets and said, please come see me play. If my team had a TV game, they would the team manager would give us tickets. Everybody on the team got tickets, and they said, go to the mall, go in your neighborhoods, pass these out. We want to pack it out. We got a TV game, y'all.
Oh, man.
And here I am on game day. I'm at the mall getting my pregame meal saying, hey, here. People ask me for autographs. Hey, come to the game. Bring your neighbor. Bring a friend. I'll give them
and
five
they,
tickets, you know.
Then they happy, too. They're like, thank you. I'll come. Like,
so
man.
When you tune in, it looks packed
okay.
so that viewers will say, oh, we got to check out an NBA game. Look, it's packed. So it looks appealing, but we really need a lot of support.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you live near an NBA town, go support your local WNBA team and just show them some love. Take your
yeah.
your church, take the youth department, take your school.
Wow.
And by the way, every WNBA, and I think NBA team, has to do a certain number of appearances. Like,
did it again.
Mac, are you serious?
You
I'm
dead there. Serious. I'm dead
are
serious.
You?
I have her phone number. I'm going to call her back. Well, hopefully.
What
we'll see.
In the heck?
It did it again. I'm looking at listening to her, and all of a sudden I see her dropped off again.
Man, you're crazy. Oh,
let me see if I can call her back.
Okay.
I'm glad we had that two-hour show.
Yes, I do. Well, it's ringing. Last time you said you couldn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go. You there?
Sylvia? Sylvia?
Sylvia? Sylvia?
Oh, Lord. Try it again.
Sylvia, you there?
This is crazy.
Let me try again.
Okay. She didn't call back in, did she?
Oh, hold on. Yeah, she... Sylvia, you there? Hello? Hello?
Oh, my God. No, they did that again.
Hello? I'm seeing her right here, but she's not... Let me try calling her again. I don't know what's going on here. Let me try calling her again.
Oh, man. I can't believe
you
this.
Have reached the voicemail box of 270-94100.
She could be trying to call at the same time.
Yeah, okay. Let me see if she calls back.
Okay.
Unbelievable. I'm sitting here right here. Here she is. Here she is.
All right, let's see if she comes back.
Hello, Sylvia.
I got booted off again. You guys promised me that wouldn't happen.
I was
I'm watching you.
I'm going to call Blog Talk Radio and find out why that happens. You're the only guest that's ever happened that I've
ever
had
happened.
On my show. I don't know what it is. But you know what? That's just for that, I'm going to pray up a storm. I'm going to make the devil real mad. I was like, okay, you keep on pulling my guests. This ain't going to keep happening.
Right.
But anyway, where were we at? What were we asking? She was talking about... there was a certain amount of appearances that WNBA
right.
had
yeah.
to make, I think.
Yeah, there's a certain number of free appearances that each player has to make. So you know, if you need a player, you know, to make an appearance at your kids' banquet or anything like that, you know, call
wow.
your local team.
Wow, I didn't know that. They do.
And
that.
They love
That's...
doing it. We
wow.
love doing stuff like that. Everyone's very down to earth, and, you know, they'll get right down on the floor with your kids. So be sure to take advantage of that opportunity.
Wow.
Is this WNBA and NBA or just WNBA?
WNBA, but I believe the NBA has a certain number. Theirs might not be 10, but they
okay.
have to do a few.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
And especially the rookies. Sometimes the NBA will make the rookies do it.
Right. Right.
But
right.
still, imagine your kid has a banquet and in comes, you know, whatever rookie that is. They're
right,
like, wow,
right.
he's got to be 6'10", you know.
Right.
Right. Exactly. To them. Exactly. Well,
do you keep in any kind of contact, or you have any ties with anyone besides Ivory Latta of anybody who's in the WNBA right now?
I do. I'm actually a licensed minister, and I do chapels for some of the WNBA teams. I've done chapels for Connecticut Sun and for the Indiana Fever. I actually did right before their championship game, I did the chapel for that. So I interact with the players. I try to just, you know, keep those ties there
mm-hmm.
just because I was coaching before. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had some players that I knew would play professionally, so I wanted to keep those lines of communication open. And I love ministering to the women of the WNBA. There's a lot of God-fearing Christian women who
wow.
are just hungry for the word. They play on Sundays, so they don't get a chance to get to church.
Right.
So they love Bible studies and chapels.
Wow.
And every team, NBA and WNBA, there's a chapel before every game. I don't know if you knew that. But
wow.
Didn't know that.
Both teams are invited. So, for example, you know, LeBron and Kobe are backstage, or Ray Allen, they're backstage and they're praying for each other. They're holding hands. You know, and there's a chaplain who takes up a Bible verse, do a little mini devotional, and then they, you know, go to their separate locker rooms, their coaches give the pregame speech, and then all you see is the ball's tossed up and they're elbowing each other in the throat, you know, because they're competitive, but
wow.
they all know each other, and they were just backstage, and it is very cool to kind of be in that atmosphere and watch
wow.
that take place.
Wow.
Did not know that.
Did not know that either.
Wow.
Give us
and some
the
of the
scenes.
Players go, some of them don't, you know, it's not
right.
mandatory, but
right.
if you want, you know, and then a lot of them go, you'd
wow.
be surprised, and they sing songs, you know, sometimes they'll bring praise and worship leaders in to sing, and people will join in and request songs, and
wow.
it's pretty cool.
Wow, that's awesome, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this other question. I wanted to ask you, when you do your camp this year, do you know the date or anything yet? Because I wanted you kind of – I know you announced it here, but I didn't know if you had a date or anything firm set or anything like that, or who was going to be there or anything like that. I was just giving you an opportunity to kind of put that out if you did it.
We don't. We're actually
okay.
trying to make sure that we don't clash with
okay.
this kind of AAUs and stuff that's going on in Ohio.
Okay.
So
okay.
we've gone through the school board, and we're trying to solidify a date that's good for the city and as well as the tri-state area, because I'm trying to reach
okay.
Pittsburgh as well as West Virginia.
Okay. Okay.
But I'll get that to you when I get that information.
Yeah, let me know, because I was trying to arrange a game. And I have to talk to you about it off the air, but I was trying to arrange a game between D.C. and Ohio to have it. I tried to do it through, I can't remember his name. Shoot.
We'll talk after
too.
The show.
Yeah, we'll talk after the show. But I was trying to arrange that, and I just couldn't. But definitely, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well and going to do that. And like I said, if there's any way I can help or anything from my end with your camp or anything like that, please, by all means, let me know. And I will be there at the river and cutting of your center. It better have your name on it. No, I was playing.
It's going to have a big mural on the side of me dunking on you, Max. Someone took the picture, and we're going to get it blown up.
We're
going to get it blown up.
Now the smack talking is coming out.
Yeah, if you
now
put a bad thing on there,
see
I
that?
Promise you, I'm going to sue you for $100 just for doing it, just for messing up my reputation. Don't you
He's
be doing it.
He's talking
I'm already,
smack
I'm,
right now.
I was getting
wow.
right there. Already, hey, look, to be honest with you, Jerry, you know me. You know uh-huh. I got, you know I love Sylvia because I'm going to tell
right.
you.
Right. Right.
You know me. I'd have tore her up when she's about. I'm like, man, what that big Jim? I wouldn't let. I was like, okay, I'm gonna let you go ahead and have that. You got that? Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna hear about. That. I've already heard about it from a few people. I'm like, okay, yeah, all right. Yeah, she got me. So what? She's 6'5". What the heck you want me to do? I can't stop her. You know, but you'll be the last one. That's I know that much. I said she lucky she a girl too. That because I don't usually let people. Everybody's tried to dunk on. I file them in a minute. Like, no, you're not. I like, nah, I'm not gonna do that. Sylvia, nice person. So you know.
I just got one thing to say.
Go ahead.
If I'm the last person to dunk on you, just don't play against Brittany Griner.
I ain't playing against no
you
Brittany
Griner. You can't even file her to stop her.
Nah, I just football tackle her. Nah, Brittany Griner.
You,
Brittany
you
Griner,
would have to.
Brittany
she
Griner,
might not go down.
She probably wouldn't. I don't want to mess with her anyway. Her voice too deep for me. She must have said something to me. I'd be like, that's all right, bro. You can go ahead. I mean, sister, you can go ahead and do what you say. What you
see,
say?
See how you do. She's had 13 career dunks.
Man, she girl. Oh, when she gets to the, this is her last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When she gets there, she's gonna be a problem. She's gonna be a problem. She's definitely gonna be a problem.
Well,
yeah,
what do you think
sure
of Miss Griner? Sylvia, what do you think of Miss Griner?
I think she's one of the better players within the history of women's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
By far. Yeah.
Wow.
And she's improving every year.
Yes,
so
she
I
has.
See her getting even better once she gets to the WNBA and she's playing
right.
against people her height every night.
Yes. Yeah,
almost every team has someone 6'5". You know, who can shoot
right.
the three and,
right.
you know, and can play inside, you know. So her game's going to expand as she's exposed to that.
Wow. All right. Well, last question, and this is what I want to ask you.
You said
is,
that 4 questions
yeah,
ago, Mac.
Yeah. Yeah.
hey, look. I'm me. I'm in charge. I run this.
Oh,
Miss
boy.
Dunk on,
okay.
Miss Dunk on me. Yeah, that's Little Man's disease. That was a sample of Little Man's disease. Anyway,
no. You know how
up,
the, you know how them little
shut
guys
up,
like to be gnawing at your ankles,
shut
right?
Up, Jerry. Shut up, Jerry. Anyway, shut up, Jerry. Don't encourage it, Jerry. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, do you see in the future for women's basketball? Do you see it overseas getting better? If the WNBA doesn't get any bigger or whatever, what do you see in the future of women's basketball? You know, I just wanted to know that from your perspective.
I don't see overseas getting any better.
Okay.
Because it's already very highly appreciated overseas,
mm-hmm.
which is why the players from the WNBA go over there. That's their main job.
Mm-hmm.
I see college basketball continuing to grow.
Oh, okay.
And just the sport as a whole. Girls can start playing. My niece is in the 4th grade and she plays basketball.
Wow.
She doesn't play for her school, but she plays for, you know, just kind of a community center.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there was no community center rec league or team for me to play on. I had to start in the 7th grade. So I
wow.
think that was it was such a big difference between boys and girls basketball because
mm-hmm.
my cousins who played, by the time they were 8th grader, they had been playing for 4 or 5 years. By the time I was an 8th grader, that was just my second year playing.
Right.
So, of course, there's a huge difference. By the time we get to high school, there's a huge difference between boys and girls basketball. Now there's co-ed leagues, you know, girls can start earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, the talent level in college, they're so much more talented than we were when I went to college.
Okay.
So I think the sport is growing. I see college women's basketball growing, which is going to help, I think, the WNBA because, you know, colleges have that fan base. Like, you know, they love Brittany Griner in Texas. When she goes to the league, whatever team she plays for, that group of fans, they're now fans of that WNBA team. You know,
right.
So,
right.
And this is how men's basketball works. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's your Ohio State fan, you've got
mm-hmm.
that favorite player, they go pro, now you're that pro teams fan, you know.
Right.
And that's just the way it just kind of recycles.
Okay.
I see. I think that's where women's basketball is going to grow. But I think it's going to just kind of happen in, at the college level.
You know what, you're too good, because the reason why I keep saying I have one last question is because every time you say something, you provoke another question. And I am going to ask another question. So since I have the time,
okay.
What do you think of AAU? I personally think it's okay, but I think it's not, it's getting to a point where it's not good. I don't like it as much as I used to, because now I think it's too much. It's too much of a money thing. It's just too seedy. It's got people in it that shouldn't be in it, and I think it should be regulated. But I just want to know your thoughts on AAU. And I'm not saying girls, because I don't know AAU girls, but I know AAU boys. You know, I just think it's a lot, and it's too much. I just think it's not, especially up here in D.C. area, it's like really seedy, and just it's just ridiculous. But I don't know what your feeling is on AAU, if you think it's good or not.
I think for boys and girls, it's become blown out of proportion. But I think there with every organization, there are pros and cons. You know, I think the cons for AAU basketball is that the players play way too much basketball in the summer. Way too much. And by the time they get to college, they are so banged up, they're injured, they're tired, they're, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous how just out of whack their bodies are, because they're just trying to cram a bunch of games into one summer, into one month, actually, July.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it kind of takes away from team basketball. A lot of times kids can't go to their team practice because their AAU team is practicing.
Wow.
You know, and it could be a bunch of kids from a tri-state kind of area. I think they're trying to regulate that now. If you don't live in that state, you can't play for that team. They're trying to do that. But the con, here's the con for that, for AAU basketball. Kids who are, like, from a Steubenville, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
get national exposure, whereas a coach may not have ever come to Steubenville, Ohio to find me.
That's true.
But because I play AAU basketball, I got exposures schools all over the country. I got letters from 250 schools, over 250 schools. My parents had to get another mailbox. They're like, we're going to have to get another mailbox just for you. You got another letter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, what it can do for kids,
okay.
You know?
That's
and unfortunately, you have some coaches who are trying, some AAU coaches who are trying to make money, who are trying to get a college job off the backs of some of these players. So their motives
mm-hmm.
are not right. But that's with every organization. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? You have
mm-hmm.
within a church, you got pros and cons. You have people whose motives are wrong for running a church, you know, but you still
true.
Go to church.
Right. That's
you
true.
Know, you got people at the bank. Their
that's
motives
true.
Are wrong. You got people
right.
embezzling money in all kind of organizations. And so AAU is no different. And
that's
so
true.
I often, as a coach, I used to think, oh my, there's an event in Atlanta. It costs coaches $600 for a packet. They're charging each team $600 to play. And there's like over 500 teams there. I mean, this is a huge, huge event. So I'd start counting up the coaches that were just in my gym, because there's, you know, there were at least, I mean, they had other high schools that you had to travel to, and then there was
mm-hmm.
this big facility that had 8 courts on it. I was thinking, these people are making millions.
Oh, yeah.
Off of one tournament for one
yes.
weekend.
Yes.
So, you know, and it happened to be a Carolina guy, so I couldn't be mad. You know, you can't hate the player, hate the game that allows this to happen. And hate yourself because you didn't think of doing it first.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, you know, people in this kind of economy are just, they're just playing their hand. They're just doing what they know and using what they got. And, you know, and the kids are, they're getting tons of scholarships in the process. You know, these coaches are getting these kids scholarships and they're going to college. A lot of these kids are first-time graduates of their families. Like,
that's
they're
true.
Generational curse breakers on their
right.
on their families.
Yes.
So, you know, there's pros and cons with it.
You,
I think as parents, you
mm-hmm.
have to shop around, find the best team, find a coach who genuinely loves young people and teaching young people, who's in it for the right reasons. If your goal is for your kid to just get a scholarship, then find a team where they place people in college.
Right.
And if that's all you care about, that's what you're going to get.
Right.
You know, but if you want your child, you know, to be nurtured when they're away from you and, you know, to be taught and disciplined the same way you would, you got to research. You got to, just like you find a good school for your child, you won't send your child to any school.
Right.
You're trying to find a good place for them, and it's the same thing with AAU team. You shouldn't just trust your kids to anyone anyways.
Right.
So I think you got to do your homework with it.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you gave that perspective, because I didn't think of it that way until you said it. But I just think I just think it should be tighter regulation and more a body overseeing it and kind of like looking at it. And I think there's not a lot of that. You know, anybody can pretty much get an AAU team, but that's the only thing I kind of don't like about it, because you got the wrong people. I'm not saying everybody, but you got some bad people in it. And that's the only thing I kind of worry about. And you're right. I think they play way too many games, because I watch those kids, and some of those kids, you know, between the parents making them do it because they're living through the kids, and then you got all these games. I just think I'm like, this is crazy. And then you got parents acting out and flipping out at games, and I'm just like, everybody wants their kid to be the next LeBron. I'm like, this is crazy. This is insane. I've been to some games where I've been like, you talk to your kids? You let your kids hear you say those things out of your mouth? Like, that's crazy. You know, so... You know, you bring up some valid points, and I don't think it
can be regulated, Mac. I don't think it can.
Probably can't.
I think where the regulations are within NCAA. So I think they regulate for the coaches to only be allowed to go to a certain number of events, or for the cost, like the school provides me money to go see these AAU tournaments. If my school say, listen, you can only go to a tournament, like your limit for a packet is $100. Then I guarantee you that these AAU tournaments, if they want college coaches at their tournaments, and if without the college coaches, the teams won't play there. They're coming there so that they can get exposure.
Wow.
So if my school says you can't go to an event over $100 and regulate that for all college coaches, now those AAU team or tournaments, they got to lower their costs. If they want us there, they will.
Right. That's true.
And that's the whole purpose, is to get us there so that we can see these kids so they can get scholarships. So I think it has to be regulated on the college level.
On the college level,
because there's no way to regulate the AAU coaches and the tournaments. That's a business. You're allowed to start whatever business you want.
Right.
So, I mean, it's out of control, and I think that that's the way that they gain control of it, is by controlling the coaches.
That's true. That's true. Never heard of that before. You have anything else, Jerry?
No, not at all. All
right. Well.
Mine's cleared.
Mine's cleared. Man, are you clear? Shoot, you just gave us a book. 2 volumes.
I'm going to write a book, actually.
Are you going to write a book? I was actually thinking that the last time you were on. I was like, man, this girl wrote a book. I really think it would be a bestseller. I think women would eat it. I mean, women and young women would just eat it up. I mean, it's a great story. I'm sitting there thinking,
Mac, funny story. I was at church, and this lady said, hey, I got your book. And I thought she was talking about my magazine. You know, I have Monarch magazine. So I said, my magazine? She said, your book. I got it. And she walked away. And so I, just didn't think anything of it. I went home, and after I ate dinner, I thought about the conversation. So I got on the internet and I Googled Sylvia Crowley, a book of Sylvia Crowley or something like that. And lo and behold, Barnes and Noble is selling a book. It's called Sylvia Crowley. I clicked on it, and it has my biography on it.
What?
It says native of Steubenville, Ohio, went to school in North Carolina. I said, what? So I drive to Barnes & Noble. I'm flying down the highway.
What?
And I asked the information desk. They pulled up the book. They said, yeah, this book cost $65.
What?
I said, $65 for a book? So I ordered it. They didn't have any more left in stock at the Barnes & Noble here. I said, is it sold out?
Goodness.
So I bought one, and it is complete trash. They basically, and I can't sue them. I called my attorney. There's nothing I could do about it. Nobody ever asked my permission. They never interviewed me for this. They basically got on the internet, Wikipedia and Google, and just got public information. It is like the, it's terrible. It is terrible.
Oh, my God.
It'll say, like, North Carolina, like, she played at North Carolina, and then it'll just give all the facts about the state of North Carolina, like the population, the
right.
state bird, the color, you know.
Get the heck out
and
of
then,
here.
Yeah, and then it talks about Steubenville, Ohio, and it gives all the information on the history of Steubenville. And so anything connected to me, you just read facts. The straight, it's black and white, straight facts. $65.
Oh,
so I have
gosh.
Been inspired to tell my own story.
Thank you. I hope
the correct way.
Exactly, the correct way, and make sure you get $65 for your book.
No, I think
like,
that's
wow.
way too high
no,
for
was,
a book.
I was being funny. I was
I
like,
never, unless it was a calculus book, I have never paid $65 for a book.
Do you know what I would like to know? I would like to know how many. I would like to know how many books they sold of that thing, $65. And how long it's been out.
Because
I'd like to see how many people did. I was like, all that money. I was like, you can't sue. That's the first thing I was going to ask. You can't sue?
Well, how long has the book been out? Do you know, Sylvia?
I don't know. I have it downstairs on my coffee table. Let me look. But this guy, I started looking to see if they started. I said, they just probably just picked a bunch of WNBA players and wrote a book on them. So I Googled, like, Cheryl Swoops, no book on her. Lisa Leslie, no book. Lisa's written her own book.
Wow.
Right.
But no one wrote a book on Lisa Leslie.
Wow.
I tried Ivy Latta. There is a book on North Carolina, and it talks about me marrying Ivy Latta, Charlotte Smith.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of come up some of the players who have gotten their jersey retired from there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But no book on Ivy Latta. So I was like, why would they just pick me? I just could not figure it out.
Get
but
the
this
heck
book,
out of here.
Let me see. It's written by Ving Carino.
You don't
that's
know
his
dude.
Name.
You're not a cousin.
I'm assuming that's an Asian name of some sort.
Oh, my God.
Printed in the USA. It doesn't say when, though.
Wow, I can't believe it doesn't say
but
copyright.
But it's terrible.
Or...
It is the worst way to spend $65
oh,
ever.
Wow.
It was published in 2012.
Wow.
Are you serious? Wow.
Yep, this year, or last year.
In this economy,
all parts of this book are
most.
Extracted from Wikipedia and free encyclopedia.
And charged $65.
And so the lady at Barnes & Noble said it happens all the time.
Wow.
People just write books about random people, and there's nothing, you can't sue them, because this is public information. If you Google my name, my whole life story comes up on the internet. It's so
that's
unfair.
True. That's true.
It's so unfair.
I was pissed off about the whole slam dunk thing. I'm still mad about that one. Because I know you. You such a good person. You probably would. It don't even bother you. But I find it very interesting that you slam dunked in the professional league, but because it wasn't the WNBA, they kind of like blot you out and put Lisa Leslie. And I'm like, oh, I like that one. I like that move. She wasn't the first. And I always get bothered by that, but you know, it's a little man disease.
Mike, let me ease your tension. I dunked in the first ever slam dunk contest, but I never dunked in a game. I didn't want to correct you the last time, but
okay.
Lisa Leslie actually dunked in a WNBA game. That's why they say that.
Did you ever dunk in a game?
Never dunked in a game.
Seriously, I'm surprised.
Seriously?
You never got a breakaway.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had a bunker breakaway, like boop. Well, okay.
No warm ups. But not a game. I tried many times. I got fouled. I shot a lot of flagrant foul shots.
I bet you did.
But how, as a big person in the WNBA, how were you in your foul shooting?
I was actually a decent foul shooter. I think the centers who struggle with their foul shooting are the ones that are extremely strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they just tend to throw the ball as opposed to shooting the ball. But I actually... I can't even remember what my free throw shooting percentage was, but it was decent. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
terrible. It got better as I progressed, along with my field goal shooting percentage. They changed my shot maybe 3 times at Carolina, and I graduated
wow.
with the highest field goal percentage on my team, which were national champions at that time.
Wow.
Right.
So that's well. I'm glad to know that. But when she said they throw the ball. So yeah. So
Dwight.
Yeah, that, I knew it.
Dwight.
I didn't think of the whole time. I was sitting like
Shaq. Dwight.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like terrible shooters. I was like these people. She's like, I think they just throw it. And I was like, yeah, they probably do throw it. Yeah,
well, they're so strong that they're trying to rely on touch. My husband does that sometimes. When he's close to the basket, he'll just kind of like push the ball because he knows he's so strong, you know,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like you have to have the same shot and the same rhythm every time no matter where you are on the floor. If you have to change it for a free throw, then you're going to be inconsistent. Like
right.
Like Mac, you've got a different shot for a three-point shot than you do
yep.
inside.
That's true.
I did my scouting report on you first day
yeah.
I played against
that's
you.
True.
Oh,
and
wow.
So,
she's right. She's right.
So it's
she's
possible
right.
for Mac to be a very accurate three-point shooter, but when he gets inside the lane,
mm-hmm.
it's tougher for him to make that shot, or vice versa, because he has two different shots that he
but
shoots.
But my thing was always trying to, but I was fast enough that I always tried to get to the basket. That's why I didn't, because I knew I didn't have that touch. So, yeah, she's right. She
yeah.
got me dead to right. I ain't ashamed to say it. Shoot.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's
a lot of
truth.
People do. A lot of people
yeah.
have two different shots
mm-hmm.
that they shoot, and they try to rely on touch just kind of just throw the ball up there and
mm-hmm.
just do it softly so it can go in as opposed to shooting it or using the backboard even.
Ooh.
I think people who are strong like Shaq and Dwight Howard, they
mm-hmm.
just need to use the backboard to soften their shot.
Yes, exactly. What do you think about this age? Because I know when I was coming up, we didn't have this. But what do you think about the individual trainers? You know, training basketball, training moves and things like that. Do you think that's good for high school and people who come up or whatever? Or how do you feel about that? Have you ever been asked to do that, to train somebody, whether a guy or girl or anything like that?
I have. I think it's good to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a type of player. I did a lot of training. I have personal
mm-hmm.
trainers.
Mm-hmm.
I would go overseas, and I would come back, and I have a trainer change my chip from international style of basketball back to American.
Wow.
And I think you could get into a rut of like, being a student of the game versus
mm-hmm.
just playing. I don't
right.
think there's a substitute
right.
for pickup basketball.
Exactly.
I think you need both.
Right.
I just like education. I think you need book sense, and I think you need
common sense.
It's the same with basketball. Like, I think you need fundamentals,
right.
but I also think you need just the experience of just playing free,
yeah,
right.
freestyle.
Yeah.
But
I
you
agree.
You also need organized basketball, too.
Right.
And there's
exactly.
some players who can't do both. Those players struggle.
Right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Good observation. Well, I want to say thank you to Sylvia Crawley for coming on our show.
I add
really
two more thank yous.
I really appreciate it. You just don't know how grateful I am, you know, for you to do this for me. And I definitely owe you, and I'm definitely going to help you any way I can. I would have done it anyway. But the fact of the matter is I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I am, be honest with you, I'm honored and I'm proud that it was you who set a record on my radio show and did all this. I was very proud of it. I was like, wow, if it's going to be anybody, it'd be Sylvia, you know,
right.
and it'd be a woman. I was like, that's about fitting, you know.
Right.
So I'm very appreciative, and I'm very proud it was you. And don't think that this is your last time coming on this show, because we are going to get you on the show again.
I
wait
put
a while.
In 4 hours with you.
No, we're going to wait a while. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, don't think that next basketball season we ain't going to get you in here, especially when you blow up on – hey, look, if Jerry know anything about me, especially when you start commentating on ESPN, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I got that ace in my pocket. I know how to get some ratings, dang it.
Write that book.
Yeah, write that book. And then the other thing is that, you know, with you being on doing the ESPN thing and seeing the games, especially women's or men's, it'd just be great to have a unique insight on you. You know, of course, we won't have you on for, you know, 2 hours or 4 hours or anything like that, but it would be love to have you on a show and just talk basketball about what you see and things like that. So, man, I gotta have you on again, but we'll wait a while till next season or so to get you on. But in the meantime, you need anything from us, if there's anything, you know, don't feel free to text me anything you running when you do your camp, whatever. I'll put it on the show. I'll let them know. You know, definitely. You are a friend of the show officially, and I'm eternally grateful for what you did. And God bless you, and you are a great woman of God, inspiration. I hope every little girl out here, every young lady, every teenager, every adult woman will re-listen to this show and be inspired to do something great. That's the greatness that's in all women. And I hope that, you know, Sylvia Crawley, you've been an inspiration to so many women, and I couldn't have asked for a better guest on my show. I really couldn't.
So, well, Mike, I just want to thank you for having me on the show. It's been a joy to be on the show, actually. And should you ever need to go on vacation and you need a substitute host, I'm your girl.
Oh, okay.
There it is.
You know what? We're going to hold you to that now.
Jerry, I was going to say, Jerry going to hold you to that. I can say it all. I'm telling you, because I do miss shows sometimes, especially during the summer when I go to the Goodman, I might be like, hey, you want to fill in? Because when I don't come, usually Jerry does it by himself.
Mm-hmm.
But you are welcome anytime.
Oh, absolutely.
Jerry.
It's on.
That's what I said. He's going to hold you to it. I'm going to hold you to it, too, because there's going to be time. I'm going to text you. I'm like, hey, look, got a show coming up this Friday. You want to take it over? You can go ahead and talk about whatever you want. And the thing about it is I don't have to worry about listeners. I don't have to worry not one bit about listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you're going to listen.
Jerry, we have now officially, No Chaser officially now has a backup host.
Uh-huh.
I'm dead serious. I ain't playing.
I'm dead serious too.
I started it now. I'm like, shoot, man. In a pinch, when Vic, you know, because sometimes Vic will come in and do it with Jerry. But I was like, shoot, when Vic ain't there and I ain't there, man, I'm gonna text you, Jerry, two words.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvia Crawley. Like,
bring it. That's all I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna text you back. Bring it. That's all.
That's right. Bring it. I know she'll do it. So, continued success. I really can't
Same
wait
here.
To really throw you out there with the ESPN and see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna make sure, you know, make sure every now and then you put on Facebook or text me. You know, when you're gonna be on, because a lot of times I don't watch because college basketball I don't watch till usually March. But if I know you're on and you're commentating, definitely. I would definitely tune in. If I don't watch the whole game, I will tune in. Okay.
Will do.
All right, tell the husband we say hello. Tell him he's a lucky man. Congratulations to you and your husband. And, you know, we'll try to get you all started. And I will call you probably next week, and we'll talk about that other thing off the air. So I appreciate it. God bless you, and I appreciate it. And with that, we are done with our show. Jerry, thanks for being the host. Thanks to our guest, Sylvia. And next week we will have, I think we're going to have the pharmacist on from AN1. Used to be former AN1, the pharmacist. So I'm going to see if I can arrange a one-on-one game between him and Sylvia because I think on this one I can win. So anyway, we will talk to you guys later, and I will see you later on the No Chaser Show. And with that, we are out.
Okay. It's been real.
It's been real.
Oh, thank you, Jerry.
Take care.
Thank you, Matt. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
tune in next week with another exciting show with JT as the co-host, and Mac William as the host of the No Chasers show. Also in store for you this weekend is Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, will be the FSP show, hosted by Vic Gardner, co-hosted by me, Jerry Taylor. Like I said, it's 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then we move on to Sunday. Sunday is the Master Plan. Guess who hosts that? Yeah, you talking to him. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time would be the Master Plan, where we're going to be talking about fantasy baseball. On Saturday, Vic talks about, he's going to be talking about some MMA, going to be talking about some baseball, and whatever else comes up in the conversation. And also next week, Thursday, would be the FSP Cruise Show, which is hosted by yours truly, co-hosted by Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker, and at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we talk about sports, we talk about politics, we talk about fantasy. That's why we call the FSP, but we're the cruise show on Thursday. So we have a vast array of shows to fit whatever flavor that you would like to taste. On Thursday, FSP Cruise Show. On Friday, No Chaser. It's just that. It's straight talk. And we have some fantastic guests. And then we talked about the Mothership, which is on 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's on the FSP show. And then I branch off all by myself with the Master Plan. So we have quite a few shows for you to enjoy. Pick one of them. I'm pretty sure you would enjoy any of the ones that we pick, that you pick, and would be able to satisfy the flavor of whatever show that you would like. And I would like to say this. It's been a pleasure for you people listening to. It's been a pleasure for you people listening. Tune in next week for another exciting show. I know I'm repeating myself, but I want to make sure that you come back, because we have a vast array of shows, and I know you enjoy each and every one of them if you just take the time to tune in and listen. We have exciting guests. We have crazy hosts. Some of them are just straight talk. Some of them are very knowledgeable, and I think you enjoy all of them. So remember, we cover Thursday, we cover Friday, we cover Saturday, we cover Sunday. So come the turn of the week, you can tune into one of us and enjoy whatever your pleasure is. With that being said, I want to thank you for listening, and all I have to say is good night.